The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Let's roll. This is Sports Rage. I am Gabriel Morenzi, the Pips, the Players, the Hustlers, the Podcasters, the people above them, and everybody else in between. Let's do this thing. It's a Twisted Tuesday. A lot of stuff to break down on the program today. We're still picking up the pieces post-Olympics, but the WBC Baseball Classic is around the corner, just 9 days away right now. The NFL Combine is here. March Madness is just like 3 weeks away. It's hard to believe. The start of the Major League Baseball regular season, and, of course, the NFL Draft, the World Cup. And next thing you know, it's going to be CFL season, UFL football, NFL football. The sports worlds are all colliding. Let's bring in Rick Saratella right now, who's getting ready to go to Indianapolis for the Combine. Rick, always a pleasure. How you doing?
Hey, I'll tell you what, Gabe. I am much happier to be breaking it up and talking NFL Draft and NFL Combine than breaking up all the snow and ice this past week.
Yeah, well, I'm glad I'm not on the East Coast. I don't miss that at all. And it's been beautiful on the West Coast. And you know what? As I was talking about, Rick, the UFL football season, a little more than a month away right now. I think they should start earlier. I don't know why they wait until March, late March, to start. There's a void that could be filled now. But it is what it is. But with that being stated, they announced some rule changes and some adjustments to the league coming into the year. The tush push is officially banned by the UFL. The NFL, it'll continue. But what's interesting about this in the UFL, they've announced you're not allowed punting from inside the opponent's territory anymore. So that's going to really open up the game and bring more entertainment to this league. And 60-yard field goals will now be worth 4 points. You hit a field goal of 60 or more yards, you're now going to get 4 points for it in the UFL. And is it a little gimmicky? Yes. But at the same point in time, Rick, I think that the UFL actually lacks fun. I think it has too much of an NFL preseason feel to it. So I don't have a problem by adding some of these sort of gimmicky rules to the league to try to open things up and make it a little bit more entertaining and funner for the fans, especially, you know, in attendance, because that's been a problem for them.
Yeah, I think scoring's been a problem too. So I like the new wrinkles. And if you remember the original XFL, which I felt like was the most successful spring season, they had a lot of unorthodox rules and player make up their names on the back of the jerseys, and fans really liked that. So I think you want to make it more appealing to the fans. I think you want to put more points on the board. And I think you want to be innovative. Like, that field goal rule is intriguing. And I think that's something the NFL might actually take a look at down the road. Now, in terms of banning the tush push, I don't like that because it's a legal play. And if you're trying to be a developmental league, well, there's a role. Like, somebody can carve out a niche playing that role, like a Jalen Hurts. So you want to get people to have those reps and try to prepare for the next level. I do like the new wrinkles. I think it adds a little excitement. It adds to the strategy, too. Once you get to that 50-yard field goal position, it makes the gamble maybe worth the risk.
So the Indy Combine means that every general manager, and pretty much not every coach and every general manager, is there, but for the most part, they're meeting the media. I did find it interesting. Andy Reid will not be attending the Combine this year. But you and I talk about this. Being at the Combine really isn't the, you know, the be-all, end-all. there are multiple teams that actually don't attend anymore. But with that being stated, there's always big news that comes from the combine regarding players that are, you know, in the league. And, you know, this is the time when general managers are going to start to pull the deal on trades leading up into the draft. And I thought it was pretty fitting that Nick Sirianni was very noncommittal about A.J. Brown being on the Philadelphia Eagles moving forward. I'd be surprised if he still is, but what's your prediction for how it plays out with A.J. Brown?
Well, yeah, well, the former Eagles head coach Andy Reid, I think he's having a knee procedure there, Gabe, which is preventing him from traveling. I know Les Snead and the Rams won't be there. Jacksonville won't be there.
Yeah, like Sean McVay never goes to this thing.
The Rams don't do any of the All-Star games. They don't do the NFL Combine. In fact, they stopped sending scouts on the road. They just have their scouts sit at home and break down film. They don't even do school visits anymore. So hard to knock them when they've produced the results that they have. But in terms of A.J. Brown, it's been a big talking point as I do the rounds here in Philadelphia. And to me, if you have one bad apple, that's all it takes to spoil the bunch. And while they were able to coexist in previous years, the way it's going right now, I mean, they're pretty much on a non-talking basis. I think there's a lot of friction in that locker room. I think they've lost a lot of veteran leadership, guys like Brandon Graham and Fletcher Cox and Jason Kelsey and so many players throughout the years. James Bradbury was a consummate professional. You don't have that presence in the locker room. So I think some things have kind of spilled over to the media a little bit more than in years past. And to me, you've got to entertain it. At this point, it's addition by subtraction. Like, even if I can get a second-round pick for an A.J. Brown, even though I'm not getting the ultimate value, it's going to alleviate a lot of the problems that they're having in terms of the chemistry there, in my personal opinion.
You know, there's bad teams. You know, people think about the draft and bad teams in the draft rebuilding their football teams, which rarely actually works, to be honest, right? Because even if teams get it right, things still implode and or the good players that they draft aren't there anymore. I think a good example is the New York Jets that, you know, we've already been through this. We can say, oh, look at all the draft picks the Jets have and all this. Yeah, they you know, we can say the same thing 5 years ago. And they got a bunch of good players.
And they got a hit.
Yeah, and it still didn't work, right? I mean, they got Garrett Wilson. They got Hall. They got this guy. They got that. Like, they, you know, they were in the same spot. So I sort of think of the draft more so for really good teams that are kind of close, that are missing a couple of parts, in which a second round, a third round, a fourth round pick that people aren't really talking about can help them, you know, get over the top. But I look at a couple of teams this year, and my Buffalo Bills are always sort of right there. Listen, the offense scores 30 points a game. We can talk about, oh, they need wide receivers and they need this and that, but they score 30 points a game no matter who's on, you know, who's on the offensive side of the football. They need playmakers on defense, bro, right? They need pass rushers. The Buffalo Bills haven't had a real linebacker since, like, Shane Conlin. You know, Matt Milano. Matt Milano's always hurt, bro. Enough of Matt Milano. Like, I'm talking playmaker, modern sort of explosive type of players. And listen, I'm talking like a David Bailey. That's not going to happen for them. But the Chargers are another team that if they stayed healthy and just continued, this is only year three for Harbaugh, right? So his plan, you know, they need to start to add some skill position there. But those are a couple of teams that I'm looking at. That the Bears are another one. The Bears are really close to being successful. They could just use another more couple of stud young defensive players. As we see how these young defensive guys you can get in the later rounds can help you win a championship like they did with the Rams and the Seahawks.
Yeah, especially at the linebacker position that you alluded to, Gabe, because this is as stacked as I can remember, and you're going to get premium value on day two, specifically at the linebacker position. And Jacob Rodriguez is a first-round pick in my book, but scouts are a little bit concerned about his hip stiffness. Maybe his time speed this week in Indianapolis can go a long ways determining where he lands. I've heard maybe round three. But to me, Jacob Rodriguez is the ultimate gamer. You talk about a guy like Anthony Hill out of Texas. He was a first-round pick coming into the year, but this is such a loaded class with guys like Arvell Reese, Sonny Styles. You know, Kyle Lewis out of Pittsburgh is a guy you're going to hear about this week at the Combine, and he's probably a day two selection. But He's a little undersized. Some people like him at safety, other people like him at linebacker, but this is a plug and play playmaker who creates turnovers. Rodriguez forced 13 turnovers, forced fumbles alone during his career. He was down at the Senior Bowl game every day. He forced fumbles, he picked off balls. He has a true instinct to find the football, and I think you're going to find some great value at the linebacker spot. And I just do want to mention, you said second round picks that can make an impact. And should Philly get a second round pick for AJ Brown? There's a kid out of Louisville, Chris Bell, and I actually comped him to AJ Brown. He's 6'2", 220. He's another man child, yards after the catch, a truck to bring down. That'd be a perfect target for the team, like the Eagles or the Bills on day two. But speaking to the pass rush, a guy like Cassis Howell, it could be hanging out at the back end of the first round. He's got an incredible bend off the edge. I think he could be in play. And there's going to be Akeem Mesidor out there. Everybody's talking about Reuben Bain's arm length, and it's going to probably come in around or under 31 inches. There's never been only one defensive end in the history of the NFL with that short arms. That'll be interesting. But you talk about Bain and Mesidor down the stretch for the Hurricanes. Mesidor is a guy right in that top 50 mix as well. A little bit older, 25 years old, so he could probably come in and play right away.
Rick Saratella kicking it with us. And Rick, we'll get you out with this. The NFL draft, as far as the books are concerned, they really haven't posted very much yet, besides who's going to be the top pick. We know it's going to be Mendoza. They have posted who's going to be the second pick. And like everything, this is always going to be a fluid market. Arvell Reese right now is locked in as the favorite at -130, but that doesn't mean it's a lock. Right, especially when you have the New York Jets. What are the Jets going to do? I talked about David Bailey. David Bailey has really shot up the board as far as like the odds makers are concerned, +180 right now to be the second pick. Reuben Bain Jr. is +500 to be the second pick. Caleb Downs is 30-1, and then there's a big drop off actually. So there's actually like massive value, Rick. Would anybody else besides Bailey and Bain, because it's not going to be Mendoza with the second pick. Caleb Downs, 30-1. Ty Simpson's not going second, but he's 40-1 right now. Carnell Tate, 60-1. Falk is 80-1. What do you think about the second pick? And do you think even the Jets even know what they're going to do?
Well, I think it's to be determined, but as for me, I mean, I'm going to trust my eyes. Reuben Bain is just an explosive player. People got scared of Aaron Donald because of the height, and he fell to the second round. I wouldn't make that mistake on a Reuben Bain. And I'm personally, I like him better as a three technique, but even outside at the edge, I think he can be a phenomenal talent. Now, David Bailey is going to be more of your prototypical pass rusher. He's going to come in at 6'2" and 5/8", right around 6'3". Proven explosive pass rusher, and that's going to have a lot of sex appeal to any NFL team. Arvell Reese is more of a projection. I heard Daniel Jeremiah on his conference call this week, and he actually prefers Reese as a pass rusher as opposed to an off-ball linebacker, which kind of surprised me because I feel like his pass rush technique is more of a work in progress and needs some refinement. I think that's more of a projection than a reality. And for whatever it's worth, I like Sonny Styles as a prospect at the NFL level more than an Arvell Reese. This guy might run sub 4.4 in Indianapolis, the son of Lorenzo Styles Sr. And I think, Sonny Styles should be in consideration, in my opinion.
Final thing, Rick. I don't know if you saw Jeremiah's comments that some people disagreed with, in which he said, watching Caleb Downs, he doesn't think that he's a superstar player. He thinks he's an efficient player, but that he's overhyped. And then he sort of, did the old, oh, he's going to be really, really, really good. He kind of wanted it both ways. Right. He said, oh, he's overrated, but then said he's really, really good. So if he's overrated later, he can say, I told you so. And if he's really good, I can say, I told you so. So I sort of got where he was going, but it seemed to me that he was leaning more with his, and you know what? I don't think he was doing it for a hit. So I think it was his opinion in which he said he's a really solid player, but he's not this superstar that people talk about. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think it is his personal preference, and that's fine. I would have liked a little bit more substance for his explanation because when he talked about his weaknesses, the only thing I heard him mention was that, oh, he's not as big as Kyle Hamilton, who's 6'2". Caleb Downs more in the 6 foot range. But I don't know what this man cannot do. I mean, Caleb Downs, helps Alabama win a championship. He helps Ohio State win a championship. And quite frankly, Gabe, I don't know if there's anything he can do to convince NFL decision makers to prove that he's the number one player in this year's draft. He's the only blue chip, true blue chip prospect that I see in this year's draft. And, I think that's the beauty about trying to identify talent. Everybody has a different opinion. But to me, Harbaugh at five, to take a Caleb Downs and have his Ed Reed or Kyle Hamilton type of safety on the back end of the defense, I think would be a home run.
Great call, right there, Rick Saratella. Rick, always a pleasure, my man. Thanks for kicking it with us. Safe travels to Indianapolis.
Yeah, appreciate you, my man. We'll come back next week and chop it up, talk about it.
There's Rick Saratella. Great stuff, Rick. All Access Football. Thanks, my man. Rick Saratella, with us. Great content, with Rick. Rick was on fire, this week, but I couldn't help but the audio was reminding me. It actually reminded me of like 25 years ago and doing like the Montreal Expos post game shows. I used to have those little like tape recorders and stuff like that. And I would tape something in the dugout with somebody. I would tape something and I'd get a dugout or on the field during the day. And then I would air it on the show after. And it was like real old school. You put the tape recorder in front of the microphone. Like, you know what I mean? Radio stations were old school in the old days. So it's like, all right, we got it on tape. We just put the tape recorder right in front of the microphone and people are able to hear it, but it has that old school sort of, I had like an old school AM radio feel to it with Rick Saratella. But great content, breaking it down as the NFL Combine is here. And one thing, don't be fooled. And we, you know, if you've been listening to the show and watching our shows for years, you should know by now. Just because the odds makers say something about the draft doesn't mean it's going to happen. They're just setting odds for what they see in the media. Like they really do not have any sort of like, it's not like, the sports books have some sort of draft expert. You know what I mean? Or like they're hiring this guy or that guy and they're on top of everything. No, they monitor basically what everybody sort of respected draft people are saying. And they basically change the numbers. They model it, right? Like if ESPN starts hyping up somebody by the end of the week, right? Those odds will be different. Every year we see this with the number one pick in the National Football League draft. Like coming into this year, man, like Cade Klubnik was like the second choice. Arch Manning was the first choice. Like, right? You know what I mean? Like 2 years ago, it just Colt McCoy. Right, like all these name quarterbacks and stuff that are all big in college and stuff, and oh, they're going to be this and that. Like I said, Arch Manning is still in college right now. Cade Klubnik is going to be like a fourth round draft pick or something, right? And he was hyped. Carson Beck, it's hard to keep up with all of them. Carson Beck was projected to be the number one pick according to the odds makers last year for a long time too, right? So as I stated, like people, there is no sort of prop out there that you can get value on, like the NFL draft. Like it really is the biggest long stock buy fest, in which if you believe and you follow this and you kind of think, and a lot of people sort of fall into a trap betting the NFL draft, in which who's better and stuff like that. It's not really who's better, right? You're not betting on who the best players are. Nobody knows who the best players are. Right, we'll find out who the best players in this draft are in like 3, 4 years. But you're really betting, all right, what's this team thinking? What's this team going to do? Are they going to fall for this guy? What's their history in the past? Do they, what do they go for here? But there's a lot of value on the board because, like I said, the odds makers don't know. And, we haven't even gotten into the combine yet. So imagine these guys have set numbers for the draft right now and who's going to be the second pick and all this. We haven't even had the combine yet. And we all know the combine, it produces ridiculous sort of overreactions for certain players that, yeah, I know it's just a combine, but we can't resist. Right. So there's still so much real estate between now and the National Football League draft, which is like 2 months away, a little less than 2 months away. You just sort of start building a portfolio of plus money picks. Like you never take the favorite, essentially. Right. Now, the number one pick of the draft this year will be Mendoza. We know it, right? Thing with Mendoza is the Raiders need a quarterback. The Raiders need a face of the franchise. And Mendoza isn't really good enough. And I'm not saying he won't be great, but Mendoza isn't hyped up enough that other teams are going to go crazy to want to trade up for him. Right? There's not like a bunch of teams in the NFL saying, man, we're going to give the Raiders whatever they want to get Fernando Mendoza. Right? The Raiders are happy to get Mendoza, and other teams are sort of, all right, let them get Mendoza, and maybe we'll take Nussmeier later, or we'll take this guy or that guy. So Mendoza will be the number one pick of the draft. For the record, if you think somehow he isn't, he's 20-1 to be the second pick of the draft, which is interesting because let's just say, hypothetically, for whatever reason, Brady is like hell-bent and saying, no. And then does Mendoza fall and you get a long shot at 20-1? I don't think it happens because I think if the Raiders didn't, they would end up trading him. They wouldn't they would tell some team, listen, we're not really taking him. So if you just give us this and that, we'll give you the number one pick. But I don't think it's going to happen. So the books have it up right now. Who's going to be the number two pick in the draft? And as we talked about, Arvell Reese is the favorite at -130 out of Ohio State. David Bailey. And these are all sort of D linemen, linebackers, hybrid type players, pass rushers essentially. Arvell Reese is -130. David Bailey out of Texas Tech is +180. Reuben Bain Jr., who we talked and saw a lot of in the college football playoffs from Miami, is 5-1. From what we watched, Reuben Bain was one of the most impactful college football players on the field this year. Right. And he did it against elite talent too. People hyped up Texas A&M's offensive line. He torched them. He lit them up. Like he made plays all the way through the college football playoff. The championship game, I think he was a little bit sort of, I think he hit a wall a little bit, but they played basically every week and stuff. And, like the dude is a beast. Like he's a monster, this dude. And Rick Saratella from the NFL Draft Bible just brought up that some people are going to call out and say, oh, his arms are not as long as they should be, right? And this is what they do in the NFL. They get insane about weird things, and I get it. You want your you got to be deflect passes and all that, and his arms and this and with the linemen. But it's like, all right, dude, whatever, dude. You saw him manhandle a bunch of people, and as Rick alluded to, the same NFL scout said it all. Aaron Donald's powerful, but he's too small, right? There's a lot of stupidity when it comes to the National Football League draft. But there's a lot of stupidity when it comes to a lot of things. And we'll bring McInnes and Cam Stewart in momentarily. I look forward to McInnes's take. We haven't gotten his take on the post-mortem Olympic loss yet. But one thing, and I tweeted this out yesterday, and it's bothered me throughout the It's bothered me throughout the Olympics. It sort of started to it happened during the World Series as well. I remember I was sitting at in Dodger Stadium, and it turned into a big, you know what, F Canada, this and that, the Blue Jays, and I remember I was sitting there, and a lot of Dodger fans were like, ah, that's stupid. And I brought it up. Because they were like, oh, USA, USA with the Dodgers. And it's like, your best player's from Japan. Like, Ohtani is your best player. He's from Japan. Your best pitcher is from Japan. Freddie Freeman is from Canada. So I'm sort of like, right? Like, people like get consumed in this tribalism now, which is like, fine. All right. So you get into the Olympics and stuff. And the ugliness, we saw it in the Four Nations last year, actually. But the ugliness of everything from the Eileen Gu girl, the Eileen Gu girl. So she's a snowboarder from San Francisco, but her mother is from China. All right. But she's from San Francisco. She lives in San Francisco, but her grandmother and her mother are Chinese. And nobody ever heard of her before, besides outside of the snowboarding world. But because she competed for China in the Olympics, like the vice president went on Fox and said there should be an investigation into her citizenship and stuff. Right, like they want to investigate her. And I saw last night they were talking, she should not be allowed back into the country. Dude, she's a 22-year-old girl who's a snowboarder. Like her grandmother's Chinese. They paid her more money, whatever, dude. Like the same people that are flipping about this girl have no problem with a bunch of golfers that they're buddies with taking money from the Saudis, though, do you? Right? Like the hypocrisy just drives me crazy. And like the hockey stuff in which somehow Canada are being called out for being like sore losers and not losing with dignity and stuff. And when every single thing has been manufactured, John Cooper never blamed a loss on 3-on-3. He said 3-on-3 sucked, but it had nothing to do with why they lost. And he said 3-on-3 sucked earlier. Nate MacKinnon talked about who the better team was. There was also another part of it where he said they're the ones that won, though. Right? Like there was a lot of this sort of stuff, but I see people like the level of classness. And I know our boy MacKinnon, it drives him crazy. Like to see Kachuk post his little bridesmaids thing with Germany and Canada and stuff. People talking about the 51st state stuff. And then they're all like, oh, you know what, but you got to lose with sportsmanship. I saw Tim Peel, the former referee in the NHL. He's saying, oh, Canadians aren't losing with sportsmanship. Brady Tkachuk is posting fucking pictures of fucking brides, like maids. You have senators talking about 51st state shit, and you're talking about sportsmanship? Oh, yeah, Donald Trump posted a video of himself dressed up as a hockey player in AA video beating up Connor McDavid. And you guys are talking about sportsmanship? Like it's just like it's the level of sleaziness is just like, you know what? At this point, just go back to the regular Joe Stiffs in the Olympics when no one cared. So you jackasses that didn't pay attention to it can go back to not paying attention to it. Right. But just the whole Olympics, I gotta say, like, I actually enjoyed these Olympic games the least. And the athletes were great and stuff, but just everything was so effing annoying constantly. About who won and she's woke and she didn't, she's a lesbian and she's this and she investigator and don't let her back into the country. Like just a constant, like it just never ends. And no one's talking about a hockey game after like this. You got Portnoy and Clay Travis and these fucking idiots running their mouth after. Hey, jackasses, fuck. You've won this first gold medal you won in 46 fucking years. All right. 46 years. Like 46 years, and they just don't stop running their mouths. Canada won 9 gold medals. You've won 2. Like, you know what I mean? But just the level of obnoxiousness. But I'll tell you what, that's one of the reasons why they won. Canada, Team Canada are too classy and stuff. They just think, oh, doing it the right way and stuff like that. No, you need to match the level of hate. You need to match the level of hate. Just point blank. Right, this is like Ohio State and Michigan, and I hate to say it, but Canada's Ohio State, right? And Canada owned them forever, and there's just sort of this level like of frustration on the other side. But at the same point in time, like you know, like I saw Sid Sixero, and I'm not attacking Sid personally on this, but I saw him do a video about oh, you know, they don't have a reason, and no one even cares about hockey in the USA, and they're not celebrating. It's like, dude, you see the video from a Miami, Ohio University? Like, are you paying attention, Sid, to NCAA hockey right now? Like, that's the, and on the other part, you know, I'm going to call out both sides. I'm going to call out the sleazeball, hey, America, act like you fucking been there before when you win something. And I'm going to call out the some of these people in the Canadian media, like a Bruce Arthur, that, well, but Trump, we didn't lose because of Trump. Who cares about Trump? All right, Trump has nothing to do with hockey. Oh, but Trump this. It's like, yeah, whatever, dude. Like, you know what I mean? It has nothing to do with like us not putting a puck in the net. All right. It has nothing to do with Team Canada screwing up the roster. And at the same point in time, the arrogance of Canadians is somehow think that, oh, well, you know what? They don't want it as much as us. No, everything they wanted it more. That's why they won. They wanted it more. You know, might not see it. You might be like delusional and stuff like that, but you know, might not realize USA youth hockey is better than Canadian youth hockey now. They have better leagues, richer leagues, more coaches, more players, more development. Youth hockey participation is up 32% in the United States. Youth participation hockey in Canada is down 28%. Do the math. More and more young athletes play hockey in the United States now. More and more young athletes in Canada play basketball. They want to be the next SGA. They don't want to be in the NHL. They want to be in the NBA. Or they want to be an MLS or a star in, like, in Europe. They want to be soccer stars. Right? The NBA, like, point blank. Doesn't mean there's still not Canadian kids out there, but as far as the whole youth program and stuff like that, hell, Macklin Celebrini's Canadian. Can play to the U.S. leagues, okay, everybody? You want to wake up to reality here. Didn't play in Canada. Played in Canada when he was a kid, all right? Played, like, when he was 9 years old, lighting up kids, like, whatever. You know, he didn't play any serious hockey in Canada. He played a serious hockey for the U.S. team, yeah, as a kid. Well, in the U.S., right? So, you know, like, people, there needs to be a wake-up call. All right, just point blank. We'll bring in Cam Stewart and McKinnis. McKinnis, I'll throw it to you first because I saw you posted about the bridesmaid stuff, and that's just the classless stuff that I'm talking about. Act like you've been there before if you win.
Man, a lot of good stuff. A lot of good stuff from you there, Gabe. I don't really know where to start. I could go on the same type of rant that you were just on. I'll just say this. If we want to talk about class, here's one thing we'll say. If you won an award, Gabe, for best show host, best radio host, best broadcaster, podcast, I'd be happy for you that you won that. I wouldn't be happy because the guy in second place didn't win. And I bet you when you look at all the Americans, right, that are thinking that all these people are happy for them, more Americans are happy Canada didn't win than that the USA won, right? And that's something we really have to think about. These fans that are casuals, you talk about Clay Travis and some of these guys that just love to get into bullshit politics. They could not give a fuck less that USA won. They're just happy that Canada lost. And if I'm Austin Matthews or Matthew Tkachuk, I'm thinking, wait, are these people actually really cheering for me? Or are they just cheering against Canada? And I think we all have our answer to that.
Yeah, but I think the players are almost every bit as bad.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
They're just, they really are an unlikable group. Like, dude, they laughed at the women's team after. Like, who does that?
Yeah. Like, who laughs? I get what you were saying about the class for Canada, Gabe, but look, I'm
well, there's a difference to me, though. It's like, listen, Bruce Arthur is a jerk. We all know that. Bruce Arthur's always just whatever. He's a media, he's the left-wing version of like the Travises and the Portnoys, whatever. Like, right, it goes both ways. I'm going to call out everybody on it. Like, Bruce Arthur's always going to find a way to just be a sniveling, like, annoyance. Like, he's going to have an annoying take somehow. And Sid Sixero, whatever, just lives in this, you know. And, you know, whatever. I think Canada needs more sort of blowhards, to be honest. So, Sid's a blowhard Canadian, proud Canadian, blah, blah, blah. But he's also, like, that attitude that Sid had about, oh, they don't really care about hockey. And, you know, they're just, you know, they're just celebrating because they won the gold medal is not true. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we beat them in overtime a couple of times going back to 2010. Like, they're tired of losing to us, Cam. And Yeah. You heard it after, like they basically said. And, you know, to me, it was weird, too, to hear them say it. Because to me, I don't, right? It's just sort of hockey. But hear, like, Tkachuk say, oh, we hate Canada and stuff. Like, and I sort of realized if you're fighting an opponent, you don't understand the hatred that they have for you. You're not going to be able to, like, you know what I mean? You need to be able to match this. So I think now Canada sort of gets it.
But is that why they lost, Gabe? I got to jump. Is that why?
No, I think, well, we didn't lose because they didn't put the puck in net. But also, Canada sort of needed the loss. The Canadian people needed the loss. It sucked. You know what I mean? It had, you know, it was between the four. It would have sucked worse somehow to me losing to Four Nations last year. Like, even though the Olympic gold medal is more important.
Yeah.
Somehow the Four Nations felt more intense last year. But if you go back to this, Canadians just are living in this sort of delusional that they're the best at hockey, right? And, oh look, you know, the 2010, the gold medal, and the 2014, and the Four Nations, and like, so yeah, overtime.
Exactly. Like, where's the gap?
Overtime. Yeah. And I even brought it up, Cam, and I said, yeah, you go back to 1972 when we beat Russia. We scored with like 12 freaking seconds left in the game, okay? So, like, always this, oh, we're the best. Yeah, we're the best, but we always win by one goal.
Yes,
and
there's no dominance.
We're not always going to get away with it. It finally caught up to us.
Excellent point. There's no dominance. All these games, the overtime wins in the past. Go back. The World Juniors now, they're getting beat. There needs to be a wake-up call because the arrogance saying, oh, we're the best country in the world in hockey. You know what? You almost lost to Finland and you almost lost to Czechia. So let's put things in perspective here. You lose in overtime to the Americans. Gabe, excellent point about hockey too. Their sport is growing here financially. Like, a lot of people have been taken out of hockey. Your parents can't afford it. Hockey Canada, as you said, they're not going to help like a kid that's not part of this rich clique going to these hockey schools, these elite programs and doing anything like that. And that's what they have to do. When you see a kid with talent like they do in the States, you know, oh my God, this guy's a wicked running back. He's a wicked cornerback. We'll find a way to get him equipment, find a way to get him on the field. And I couldn't agree more. I think this is a wake up call for everybody to say, you know what? We're very good, but we're not invincible. And every country in the world could play with us. Let's get better.
Yeah. And it doesn't help the NCAA now. Like, if you're a guy like Gavin Bacchetta, you know, Bacchettis, okay, you're getting paid. You're making them better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the whole thing about what, you know, like, that's what they want. They're trying to steal our best players now to make themselves better. So not only, like, will it make their team better, whatever, at their school, because the university doesn't care where you're from. They're not thinking about, like, Team USA hockey or anything like that. But ultimately, that's what's going to happen. Right. If more and more of the best Canadian top players end up going to the NCAA for money, therefore the quality of play in the CHL won't be as good because the best players will be in the NCAA. Like, there needs to be a serious, like, people, they, and, you know, when it comes to like this stuff, guys, they only really have like, oh, we need a big investigation into Canadian hockey. Is if there's like an assault or a trial or something like that. It's like, all right, we need to like, yeah, there needs to like, you know, but there really does need to be like a grassroots all the way down from like, and the thing is too, like, you need to listen, like, the Hockey Canada people who don't listen to anybody need to listen to like an 8-year-old kid's coach. Like, they all need to be in the same room and on the same page and say, all right, this is like what we're doing. This is where you're going wrong. This is where we think you're going wrong along the way, along the development and like all the way up. And you know, it's serious when Pierre Maguire McInnes, who Pierre, say what you will about Pierre, he's polarizing. Some people don't like him, but he does, like, he knows hockey. There's no disputing his passion for the sport. But Pierre is kind of, for the most part, a company guy. He's a hockey guy, right? Like, I used to have him on daily. Like, when I was on in Montreal, I don't think he liked coming on daily with me, but, like, he didn't have a check. He was paid to be, like, he was a daily host. Like, he was a daily guest on all the shows. So, like, I used to speak to him a lot. And I used to bother him. Like, he's one of those protect all coaches. No, Gabe, you shouldn't see it. You don't understand. Like, he's an NHL coach, right? Yeah. He's a company guy. But I think now he's older and he's sort of, I don't know, he got let go by them, basically, right? Like, he's not in their little circle right now as much. So I think he's more open and honest. But he ripped Team Canada the other day, McInnes. I was surprised. He basically said, I'm just tired of the same old suits that think they know everything, that are stuck in the past running Team Canada. McGuire wanted the younger guys on the team as well. And in hindsight, that was a big mistake. Big mistake. Like, this three-on-three stuff, like, they should have known, right? They, listen, we're going to end up in overtime. We're always in overtime, and it's three-on-three. The team should have been more skilled. It's funny because we called out, oh, how is Robertson not on USA? Or how is not, like, Cole Caulfield? They built a pretty much perfect team. They came together and stuff like that. They sniped. That was the difference. They were able to finish, to bury their opportunities. But the amount, like Connor Bedard on a three-on-three, we were lacking offense. We had two lines. And Matthew Schaefer is another example. Like, you can't tell me that Drew Doughty's better than Matthew Schaefer is right now. But Team Canada is so stuck on, well, he wasn't on our list before, and he's only 19. He's only 18. It's like, yeah, but he's better. He's better than the other guys on the team. It's like Macklin Celebrini's only 19. He was our best player, right? And I tell you what, yeah, Celebrini's great. You know, Connor Bedard's having a great year too. Like, Bedard really could have helped on offense. And people, oh, well, what was defense? Well, you don't put him on the freaking penalty kill. You put him in favorable situations and he can help your team. Sean Cooper did a horrible job, McInnes, managing the roster, and Team Canada did a horrible job building the roster.
It's such a difficult situation because I think, guys, you talk about all the overtimes, right? And I think it makes it more difficult for us with doing these podcasts because the game was 3-on-3 over. Forget about the 3-on-3 because it went to overtime. It's almost would be easier for all of us to have this talk right now if the Canadians lost 5-1, right? Because all we can think about is Devon Toews having an open net, Nathan McKinnon missing a shot that he makes a million times in his life, right? We can think about Sidney Crosby, you know, Captain Canada, the veteran on the team, not being out there. Like, you know what's funny that makes me laugh, guys, is that people said, well, he said he's not going to be out there if he can't go full on. And everyone said how selfless it is and how great it is. And you guys know I agree with that. Couldn't they have used Sidney Crosby on half a leg on that 5-on-3 power play? I think that they probably score with him on that 5-on-3 power play. But I'm a Cooper guy, but I was tweeting at you and following along with your tweets. I think it was Monday, Gabe. I don't think he trusted enough people. Like, Suzuki dude was the guy that scored the game tying goal, you know, when you needed it the most. You know, Bo Horvat played well. Brandon Hagel plays on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Like, let some of these other guys play. Marchand is a veteran. You brought Sam Bennett for a reason, right? Why did these guys not get the ice time? And I'm sorry about this, but Macklin Celebrini could have had 25 shots that night. He wasn't scoring a goal. There's no accident that on every single play when McKinnon and McDavid were out there, why do we think the kid was the one that got all the shots? He hit the glass 4 or 5 times. You know, imagine if Bo Horvat was out there on the power play, or I don't know, Nick Suzuki has the third most power play points as a Canadian hockey player this year, didn't sniff one single minute on the power play. So there's something to be said about, yeah, we could have done this, could have done that. At the end of the day, I have to give them credit is that they were played more as a team, the Americans. JT Miller and Vincent Trocheck,
they knew their roles.
They're not that great, Gabe, in their NHL teams right now, but they played great for that team. I just don't think John Cooper trusted the rest of his team enough.
You need to know your role, right? Like, when you're in a situation like that on a team, okay, I'm normally the guy or I'm normally this, but on this team, I'm that. Like, if you're Nick Suzuki, you didn't know, like, going in. Like, you know what I mean? You're like, I don't know. I might play 10 minutes. I might play 14 minutes. I might do this. I might do that. Horvat didn't know. There was too much uncertainty. The U.S. were all on the same page, just point blank, at least they like in their roles. Okay, this is what I got to do, and I don't have a problem with it. And let's give credit to Quinn Hughes. You know what I mean? He was awesome. You know, and when it's all said and done, McKinnon scores 99 times out of 100, and we're not even having this conversation. And we're still arrogant and think we're the best. It could have, should have, would have. Like, I don't know. I look at it sort of like a football game that, like, We got stopped on the goal line like two or three times. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, we moved the ball way more than they did, but we didn't score. Like, we got stopped on the goal line twice.
Your point's still astute because you win that. There still needs to be, wow, there's not this gap between, oh, we're so much better than you, and you know what? We're going to dominate. And the arrogance of people who play in Canada hockey, that's the whole thing. Like, you know what I mean? Sure. They could have had many opportunities. Hellebuck with the stick save. It was unbelievable. I can't believe he made that save. But regardless of McInnes, if it's 5-1 or whatever, we need to have these conversations.
Yeah. Hey,
you know what? I'm more proud of the women, to be honest with you, because they were huge underdogs against the States, and they played their damn asses off. They went to overtime as big underdogs. Those women played great. Gabe, you talk about Poulin and them. That, like, I'm watching the game going, the U.S. has dominated teams like with 90% possession, and Canada played those women. They played their asses off, and nobody should be ripping them. But anyway, bottom line is, yeah, the arrogance of the people running hockey, it needs to change. That's the bottom line.
I agree with you, Cam. I certainly agree, and I wasn't trying to take anything away from the fact that
I'm just making a point of like you know what I mean, the loss or whatever. To Gabe's point, it's like this discussion, win or lose, has to happen, right, Morenci?
We're not going to win every time.
Yeah, it's just tough that
it finally caught up. I will say this though, that I agree with you, Cam. Like the women, they poured their hearts out. So did the men, right? They poured their hearts out. But when I saw Hockey Canada post silver shines just as bright, we're proud of you. I was like, yeah, not now. I'm not that proud of you, to be honest with you. I'm really not. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
I agree. Not now.
All I meant, though, Gabe, is that if Canada won this game 5-2, like the analytics suggest they would, then, like you said, are we having this conversation at all? Like, if Hellebuck doesn't, you know, if McDavid doesn't run into Hellebuck on a breakaway, if Celebrini doesn't shoot at his pads, you know, they're up 3 or 4-1. If Makar and Toews don't get danced by fucking Matt Boldy, you know, like, so I get it completely. And I understand the World Juniors, Cam brought it up. The World Juniors is the epitome because that's the future. And I understand some of these guys could have been there like Celebrating, but they weren't. But it's just, it's so much tougher, I think, to swallow this pill and to have these conversations when they outshot them by double as many shots and did that. You know what I mean? Like, pretty much we watched them get Carey Priced. Like, we watched them get Carey Price, guys. That's what we watched, except for Carey Price played for the Americans this weekend.
Yeah, well, we've been on the other side of it. Memory serves me correctly. Who was the one going back years? It was Marty Brodeur, who was the goalie. Then I think it was the USA. They hit a goalpost and stuff. Like, we've been lucky over the years, too. Like, we've gotten breaks. It just sort of – and, you know, Nate McKinnon said it, actually – I had a weird feeling earlier in the week. I got to be honest with you. I just didn't want to say it out loud because I don't want to be negative, but I knew we were going to lose. Like, I just knew. I just had Buffalo Bills written all over it, man. I was just like, yeah, this is just like the way we were getting through the week and stuff. I was like, this is just, we can't keep winning 2-1 in overtime. Like, it's going to backfire. And it finally did. I just sort of had a bad feeling. Not, you know, it was basically about midweek. Like, after going into the Finland game, I was like, this isn't going to end well. Like, this sort of knew, like, yeah, whatever. Even if we get past this, just – and even that went to overtime. And I just sort of knew. And then I heard Nate McKinnon say, which is weird for a guy like him, who's just so intense, to say – he said all week it just felt like it wasn't meant to be. I was like, whoa, like, like, he knew, like, there was something inside of him. And I think he meant more for him, though, than the team. And he said, I don't know. And he said, I don't know if you saw it, McInnes. He talked about, like, the shot. And, like, he said all week it was just off. He said it was just like it wasn't meant to be, like, type thing for me. Like,
yeah,
kind of weird. And I was wondering about, what do you think about him moving forward with the Avalanche now? Does he fall into some sort of weird shell? And let's not forget, Makar's mistake, like, turned into the goal as well, bro. Like, that was just a nightmare for the Avalanche players. Like, that whole, like, the whole,
yeah,
the game, the whole thing, like, Makar, it's going to be haunting McKinnon. And I'm not blaming Makar because he played his ass off, but you know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I mean? He shouldn't have been where he was, and it just is what it is. But what do you think about the Avs moving forward? Do they channel this and just sort of like hell to pay right now? You got to believe that they're stronger, more strong than weak. But yeah, McCarr and McKinnon are going to be really enraged for the rest of the year. What's your take?
Well, I think that Martin Natchez looked better than David Pastrnak on Team Czechia, Gabe.
Yeah, that's a good point too.
Pasta had a good last game, but Natchez looked phenomenal. And I think that, we want to talk about the sidekick, the Batman and Robin type thing. It goes to show that Natchez is great without McKinnon. He's great on his own. And I think that he's fit so well into it. I think honestly, like my thoughts on the McKinnon and McCarr stuff, like it's two brutal mistakes by guys. You don't usually see it, but one of the guys, Michael Agello, I was working with the Hockey News, he just said a lot that, and he's American, but he said a lot, like, I think that there was just far too much utilization for the top guys. And so they just had brain fatigue, physical fatigue. But I think going into this, one thing that people don't realize is that the Avalanche are deep, right? Like Brock
Nelson
is a really good player.
At the same point of time, the USA left Quinn Hughes on the ice for 2.5 minutes straight, right?
Yeah. Brock Nelson's going to get 40 goals this year, maybe. He might get 35, 40 goals. Like, yes, this is a good team. So
it is. The way I look at Gabe's question, though, Colorado's one of those teams. You talk about President's Trophy, right? Take a look at their record after their start. It's kind of like they're better and they are still the top team, but they're also coming down to earth. That miraculous run does not exist anymore, despite being the deepest team. There's still a couple of good teams in the West. They've had a history of losing to Dallas. That Gabe, I don't know how they're going to come out of the gate, but as I said, like from a betting perspective, I'd be very wary of Colorado. That's all I'm going to say. I think they're a team that they know the big picture exists, that they have to all be 100% healthy. They have to be there. So this regular season stuff, I think you're going to catch them napping sometimes as big favorites.
I hate to say this, but the Minnesota Wild with Matt Boldy and Quinn Hughes on the team. Let's not forget about Kaprizov, who didn't go to the Olympics. Mm. That could
Dangerous.
Be a team that's, yeah, I think that could be a team that we look at. I mean, everybody loves that whole division as a whole. But I think if you look at it right now, Colorado plus 350, you can get Minnesota still 19-1. Like, that's pretty enticing.
Great odds for the Minnesota Wild, even though it sickens me to see Quinn Hughes on Minnesota. It bothers me, but good odds for a team that are super dangerous. What about the Canadiens at 30-1, McKinnis? You buying or selling that?
I think at the start of the year,
pretty
man, if
odds.
You told me they made the playoffs, I would have felt pretty damn good about just getting to the dance. But I actually, before I hopped on with you guys, I was making some lunch listening to Marty St. Louis press conference, and he's pretty much having this attitude now. Hey, we don't care about just making it. We want to do something once we get there. So I think a Western Conference team is winning the Stanley Cup this year. But I think if you take a little sprinkle on the Canadians to win the conference at 11-1, and then those odds that you just mentioned there, Gabe, are pretty damn good as well.
I see 40 on FanDuel, an extra 10 for you guys for the Canadians.
Well, the NHL is weird too. Hey, like that they have weird matchups, right? So the Canadians might dodge a couple of bullets along the way. Like, listen, are Tampa, Tampa the team to beat in the East? Maybe Carolina. Right. So those two teams, I don't buy into the Florida Panthers this year. Maybe they have some sort of miraculous run. I don't think they'll be an easy out, but I don't think they're going to go back to the cup. So you got the Lightning and the Canes. I don't know. One of them gets knocked off or they end up playing each other. Like, Cam, like the Canadians at 30-40-1 are just that alternative team, so to speak, that if these, a couple of these other teams stumble, it's very good odds.
I agree. And I think hockey is one of those sports where you could take a stab at teams like that. It was very rare to get Seattle and New England at the Super Bowl with crazy odds at the start. But in hockey, we've seen underdog stories before. In the West, that's a great price for Minnesota. I don't know how you guys feel about the LA Kings. They're a team that's always been kind of there in the playoffs, just falling short. They played with Edmonton and, just never seemed to get there. But I'm just kind of looking at them going, they're an interesting team to me. They're very... I don't know. Not under the radar, but I'm looking. I'm like Dallas. Yeah, people
big
like Dallas.
Odds. Same thing with the Kings. You're
the Kings are
value,
a team that could beat anybody and lose to anybody, in my opinion, Gabe. And I think they're pricing them like they have no chance, and I think they do have a chance.
If they get more aggressive at the trade deadline, too, we'll see. A team I'm sort of looking at here, but the odds aren't great. The Oilers. Does McDavid ever like him? Draisaitl and back with Hyman now and. they are dangerous, McInnes. You get the Oilers into the playoffs, right? I know we've seen this picture before, and we've been down this road before with this team, but they've also, they are the two-time defending Western Conference champions as well. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, I mean, geez, like, you got to feel for the guy, Connor. I mean, he loses in the OHL championships, loses twice in the Stanley Cup, and you lose. I mean, how much heartbreak can a guy take? You got a pretty good life, you know, nice house, all you can do with the sponsorships, the money. Good-looking woman.
It's true.
Well, Josh Allen hasn't made the Super Bowl, right. but I agree for the most part. Yes, I think. But the thing is, guys, I think that when I'm 40 or 50 years old, I'm going to be sitting at a bar with some friends, and I'm going to be talking about how many GMs screwed Connor McDavid's career because they haven't done enough for him. Last year, who did they pick up? Trent Frederick and who else? I can't even remember who else they picked up. Like, they just let him and Leon do it all on their own. Hyman was injured. Like, I'm not making excuses because he was not good in every closeout game he's been in, but this is going to be a really good trade deadline. And I think that a lot of these GMs have had what was it, guys? 2.5 weeks to do some really long thinking. And I see right now while we're talking, Brett Kulak has been traded to the Colorado Avalanche defenseman. So we'll see what happens. But I think in the next couple of days, we're going to see some madness as far as these trades are concerned.
Yeah, I was starting to sell the Avs going into this. I was like, they're not going to win and all this. But I could see the Avs just sort of like sitting down in a room and saying, all right, screw the Olympics. That's done. We've got our own business. They're clearly aggressive here right now. It'll be fun to see how this plays out. But, you know, McInnes is right. The NHL GMs have had weeks to think about trades and talk. They've been talking, right? There's a moratorium on trades, but it wasn't a moratorium on these guys calling each other and texting each other and saying, all right, let's do this, you know? So it should be a pretty more than usual active. The guys on TSN cam, the 28 of them might have actually something to talk about this year.
Your best is the point too. It's like, do we really need five people on a panel? Like, it's just like, it's like, okay, so you have the same opinion as person number three to person number one. It's like, enough. Like, but anyway, I digress. You know what? Colorado is going to be all in, but I'm with McInnes. It's like, you have the best player in the world. And I know Dreisaitl's right there, but you got to do more. It's one of those things like Edmonton, you've been short twice now. Like, you have to go all in because nothing means more than a Stanley Cup. Carolina's the same kind of thing in the East. Like, every time you look like you have this great team in the regular season, you can't get over the hump. Like, you have to go, you got to do something. I'd rather be mediocre and shit, Gabe, than like go for it. You know what I mean? Because just seeing Seattle even win a Super Bowl this year, it's amazing. You know what I mean? It's one of those things that you never know when you're going to get it again. And it's really hard to win. And there's a lot of great teams that aren't going to win. So got to take a chance. You got to go in, especially those teams that have fallen short historically, like year after year after year.
It'll be an interesting trade deadline for sure. It'll be an interesting offseason too, even moving forward. Like, teams like the Blackhawks, the San Jose Sharks, especially the Sharks, that they already knew how good Celebrini was, but now, like, they're building just sort of. Then they can say, all right, the thing is, he's so good, it's almost like Wembanyama, that players will want to play with him or on that team at least, right? If the Sharks don't, you know, waste it, basically. But I don't think they will. I think they get it. Andrew McInnes, check him out, wagertalk.com. Yeah, check Cam out. You see him on the grid on Wednesday night. Thanks to Rick Saratella for joining us earlier. Ton of information and rage on this podcast today. We appreciate everybody
tuning
in. Got
any picks there, Gabe, for tonight, for hockey, the late games or anything? Do we make a pick?
What do you got?
I'm thinking about taking the Kings over the Vegas Golden Knights, and I'm going to use my theory. I want more, but give me Utah +110 against Colorado at home. I don't know what McInnes and you like.
That's tomorrow.
Was that tomorrow? What day is it today? Oh, it's Tuesday today. Oh my God. I'm so sorry. I just zoned out there. I apologize. Yeah. Those are my picks for tomorrow. Thanks, Gabe.
Yeah. Thanks for interrupting the end of the show, Cam, for absolutely no reason whatsoever. But
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That's all on me. I screwed up. I thought it was tonight. Wow. Sorry.
Yeah, if I wanted your picks, I would have asked.
That's a good point. You didn't ask me, and I just offered. Sorry. My bad. I'm turning off.
All right. Everybody loves picks.
Other than that, you're on your own later.